This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, boys and girls, it is podcast time, and it is time to talk about something that we really have never talked about, and it's happening right now. We've talked about the dumps and what happens there and how should you approach it, but what happens when it's pretty much dumping all week long, as it is this week, north, northwest, north wind every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and big winds on Saturday. We'll get into that. I'm John Lopez. That is Captain Scott Knoll across from me. He's got antlers with him. We'll have to ask about that. Captain Caleb is across from me as well, and he's got some new ink he's sporting. Maybe even ask about that as well. But we'll get going here. We got all kinds of great topics. All of them come from you, including one that I think is going to be good. Maybe a little bit tardy on the old New Year's resolutions, but we had that great podcast last week. If you didn't hear it, you can listen to all our podcasts wherever you get this one. And you can subscribe. That's at iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and virtually, literally, everywhere you can get a podcast, you can get this one. But last week, we had Shane Bonneau on talking about all kinds of things with the freeze and oysters and reefs, et cetera. You can listen to that. And this one, fishing, New Year's resolution. Like I got a hunch it's going to get a little feisty, which is always good. Really good stuff. I actually recorded this one before we came on air. So I can tell you, JT Koshy over at the Boatyard, a lot of people in the market the new year to get a new boat, a pre-owned boat, whatever it is. A lot of people just really don't know everything you should do to test drive and examine that boat before you buy it, looking for red flags and stuff. So we'll get that from him. Trophy trout season is upon us and fast approaching if it's not already here. Hard bait options, we'll get to that. That's some detailed stuff on one of our questions from one of our listeners, which, of course, our listeners all come in on, not all, but most come in on the Facebook group page, Bite Me. Just search that, and on Facebook, you should be able to become a member. We have 7,000 plus now, which is really cool. You can also contact me at Lopez on Sports on Twitter, at Lopez on Sports on Instagram. Of course, I have Facebook. Same thing with Captain Scott. Same thing with Captain Caleb TV. But let's get into it right now. Before we get to the dump, we got some stuff happening here, man. Your humble hosts are doing things. I'm going to start with Captain Scott Knoll. You're fresh off of a trip from Florida. Saw a beautiful pompano that you caught, which means you're doing something with that shoulder of yours. That wing's getting a little better. But what else was happening down there, Scott?
Well, I went down there to hang out with the DOA crowd, Mark Nichols and Ned Zayak. They took me on a little tour of the factory. Got to watch them make baits and crawled all through Mark's little laboratory where it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It's like a museum in there. He's got all kind of stuff where he's, you know, piddling and making all kind of baits. And I mean, he just carves stuff out. You know, he comes up with these ideas and carves them out of wood, and then he makes a mold out of it, and then he shoots the plastic. And I shot a little video of him doing a crab. It was pretty cool. And, I mean, he just took clay and he caught a crab, and he took some clay and he mashed it together and made himself a real lifelike soft plastic. And then he poured it. It was pretty cool.
Those are actually pretty popular in some areas more than others. I know when I fished Sabine, which I might mention that again when we get to your other news here, Scott, but when I fished Sabine, a lot of people down there use those soft plastic crabs, and I'm telling you, man, it's just as good, if not better in some instances because of the durability. What's his take on that?
Yeah, I mean, he's just playing with it right now. Mm-hmm. And his thing was, over there, they throw a lot of crabs, you know, in the passes. During the crab migrations, so they catch a lot of live crabs. They harness them and throw them out there for tarpon.
That's tarpon, pretty sweet.
Bull reds.
And I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it with redfish a lot too, different sizes. We're going to talk about the northwest winds that are just dominating this week and what we can do from there. But a couple of other things. Kayla, before I get back to Scott, I mentioned you got some new ink on your arm. You're a big fan of tattoos. And I wouldn't normally mention that because, you know, it's not that big a deal. But that's going to be kind of one of the new twists on Captain Caleb TV this year, which, of course, you have 10,000 plus subscribers there on Captain Caleb TV. You know, some of the things that you've got going there as a teaching pro. And for those who haven't seen the YouTube channel, I would highly recommend it. It really fits hand in glove with what we do here on the podcast, and there may be more of that to come in the future, but you got some plans for your channel as well.
Yeah, we're making it more entertaining this year. Some of the stuff is going to be just going out having fun. Some of it's going to still be in my studio teaching. I twisted it up all together yesterday, and I did a video on my new favorite quirky to throw, and also what I believe to be the best quirky for beginners, while getting a tattoo. And the fun part is the artist is Mike Ashworth. He is also an avid fisherman and a YouTuber as myself. And so I'm talking about the quirky. Then Mike gives his experience behind the quirky while tatting me. So YouTube is a big, vast place. And I can guarantee, I'm very confident that that is the only video on YouTube that encompasses those three things.
Tattoos, quirkies, and what's the third thing?
Well, the tattoo artist knew just as much about the quirky as I did. So you got a fishing story, a technical approach, and you get to see me getting poked a lot all in the same time.
I feel a little bit left out. Scott's sipping on something that looks cold and very tasty, but maybe I can
that
fix
green
that
ice
here.
Chest right there behind me.
And
that green ice is full of that.
Oh,
nice shiner.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
I got
last thing before we get into all the topics, Scott. And this does tie in with the podcast because I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again real quick after you tell us what happened last night. You got something very, very rare.
Yeah, I was hanging out thinking I'm, you know, going to shoot my big buck for the season. I'm, you know, rut's on and sitting up there in the stand, and I look off to my left and out walks an elk. Huh. I mean, we know we have them out here, but we rarely ever see them. I mean, it's a big place, and there's only three elk on the whole place, and the ranch owner wants them gone, and so I obliged. And
Well, that's good, and that's about 350 pounds worth of meat you got after it's all cleaned and everything else.
Yeah, all cleaned up. We weighed it up after cleaning it and everything. It's 340 pounds of meat.
Caleb has Steve with him. I wonder what Steve would dress out as.
Would dress out as a solid 6'2". You know, funny story about Steve. Everybody makes fun of my little white Jack Russell I carry everywhere, but his parents are actually blood trail dogs. That's what he does, and I've seen him do some incredible things with his nose.
There you go. You didn't get the invite either, though. So
no.
We'll get to that real quick on the elk story, because I use this story for our listeners every time somebody says, and we hear it all the time. Boy, you know, the best thing about fishing is sometimes you just never know what you're going to see on the water. Could be fish, could be water related, could be just something unique, you know, whether it's whatever. Some people have seen, you know, some wild fish up close. Scott's talked about, you know, sailfish inside the jetties and all that. This has been probably 20 years at least ago, because my two sons are now, one's about to turn 30 and one's 33. And I was fishing in Sabine, and we were going over on the north side, you know, the northwest side, northeast side of Sabine Lake, and just doing our deal and trying to catch fish, et cetera. And I'm puttering along, and hand to God, if I'm lying, I'm dying kind of thing. We're puttering along, and we see something on the shoreline that's just kind of moving into the water. And I'm like, that's some big animals. What are those, deer? Or, you know, are those hogs? What are those? So we keep puttering along, and sure enough, and the old salts at Sabine will back me up on this story, because I think they're all long gone now. But on that far northeast side of the bay, the lake, apparently years and years and years ago, Somebody brought in some elk. It was private land or whatever. Maybe it was the state, you know, the feds, whatever it was, brought in some elk in that property. And I just happened to catch them on the one day where they all decided to take a swim. And I'm telling you, Scott, you know, it was 20, 25 elk just swimming in about 4 feet of water. And they were not scared at all. They surrounded our boat. I was using one of those old Instamatic cameras, those little throwaway Kodaks. And I took a bunch of pictures, and they're here somewhere. I have them somewhere. And it was the most, you talk about the things you just never imagined you would see on the water. I saw elk in Sabine Lake, and they were surrounded my boat. I don't know if I'll ever top that one, but I'll continue to try because it was
almost smoking the good stuff.
Man, well, my kids were like 8 and 10 years old, so I don't think so. But it was incredible. All right, so let's get into the meat here of some of the topics. Caleb, I'm gonna start with you. I know Scott has some thoughts on this because he's the king of the dump, which really sounds a lot worse than I mean it to. But Scott is the king of the dump.
Hey now,
So Caleb, all our listeners have learned a lot, and we love getting your messages. Hey man, I did what you guys talked about. There was a big northwest wind. I was in the drains. I waited. It was cold, but it was worth it. So now, Caleb, it's been blowing north, northeast, or northwest. It will have blown north, northeast, or northwest all week long. That, first of all, that's not a dump. But what do you do when that happens outside of finding the clean water?
Well, first off, I'd like to go back to something you said earlier. And I would almost love the opportunity to tell my insurance company that I hit an elk with my boat.
Well, you're the only one. You would be the one most likely to do it.
Well, I mean, whether I am or not, I would love that opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's just wintertime fishing for you. The tides have blown out, and now it is steadily just kind of holding them out, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it's time to know those low spots in your bay, you know, the spots that are too deep to really get across earlier in the season without getting water in your waders. Well, now they're wadeable. Now there's reefs in the middle that are wadeable. And that's really what we focus on whenever it dumps out and it stays out. And that's where it's so important to, you know, we always talk about, you know, keeping a log or, you know, just keeping the back of your mind, everything that you've done all year, because now's the time whenever it can really pay off and you know where that deeper, muddier spot is, or you know where that reef out in the middle is. Cause what Pat and I, you know, what we saw is some days they were up really good wading and some days they were in the middle, and, you know, wading in the middle is a thing and something that can be very powerful in the wintertime.
So it's wading season is what you're saying, Caleb. I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a majority of our followers and listeners are interested in catching those bigger trout, and it's the time of year to do it. This is it. This is, you know, when it is. And another offshoot, if you will, Colby Balsh and I were talking yesterday, and we were talking about the fact that right now up on the edges isn't very consistent. And what I was telling about, and it's something I've observed for years, is you get this thing in your head that, well, the water's gotten cold, it's time to wade the edges now. And if you think of it in more of a macro perspective, is that when it's just started getting cold for us, right? So the deeper water out in the middle is probably still warmer than that shallower water on the edge, because the shallower water on the edge is cooling faster. There's going to come a tipping point to where the water in the middle is now as cold as the stuff on the edges. And now the warming trends are what is actually warming that stuff on the edges. And then that's where you get into knowing where your deeper spots with your mud are that you can wade to with the shallower tides.
And that's why you see waders on the shoreline in February after all these things have already kind of run its course. All right, Scott, you're going to be in your skiff a lot of times in this weather. Different perspective, different approach than what Caleb was just talking about, I would suspect, but days and days and days of the same northwest wind. Again, that's not a dump. What are you looking at? How are you approaching it?
Well, the back lakes have dumped out and they're not coming back for a little bit with all that. Lakes are in the marsh are generally succession. You know, the shallowest one's the furthest back, and then it gets a little deeper as you get closer to the bigger water. And I would just work my way into where as far back as I can go, honestly, on the sunny days. And those redfish are still back there. Yeah, they're still they're still prowling around. They're still doing their thing. And the plus is the water's a lot clearer, so you get to see them a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Given that it's continued on, you know, even some of those bigger lakes start getting dry. And at that point, then you move out along the edge of the intercoastal. Redfish aren't going to really go deep, you know, unless it gets super cold. So for the most part, I'm just going to, you know, find the first water that's enough to cover them up.
Yeah.
And that's about as far as I need to go.
Go back as far as your hopefully skinny water boat or your poling skiff can go is kind of the strategy. What about, you touched on this a little bit, Scott, the mouths of a lot of these drains. I'm not talking about necessarily the mouth to the intercoastal or to the ditch, as we call it. But some of the mouths that go off, kind of spidering off some of these lakes, a lot of times, to me anyway, in my experience, just a little bit deeper water. I don't know why they seem to stack up on the mouths. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they'll fall off into those cuts that join the lakes, mm-hmm. you know, little bayous that join them up. Many times back in the back end of Greens, I'd go to one of those little spots where when the drain happens, it really sucks it out and it just washes those areas out. So there'll be a little bit of a deeper gut there, and push my way back through some shallow stuff to find one of those guts and just sit on it. And
the other thing, Caleb,
a huge school.
Go ahead, Scott.
A lot of times there'd be a huge school sitting there.
Yeah.
And we'd sit there and work them for an hour.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, Caleb, he mentioned, and you mentioned, you know, the clearer water. This is for me, because I'm not quite as daring as you. This is a time of year that puttering is probably preferred. You know, because a lot of these reefs that you normally barrel through, even sometimes in the middle of a back lake or even in the bay, they're 2 inches under the water. And so, you know, this is one of those where you can really take your time and putter along and find the bait, find the fish if you can see them, et cetera. Don't you think?
A great time to find the reef too.
Yeah.
You know, when the water's clear and
hopefully
lower
not with your boat.
Yeah. I mean, they're easy to see. They're big dark spots right now. It's a good time to go out there and learn. And on top of that, kind of learn where the deeper spots in the lakes are. So in the summertime when you need to jump up or you get in there and realize it's shallower than you thought it was, you kind of know where to put your boat at to have the least chance of calling another boat to come get you. I mean, this is the time of year when the homework's done. It's not a lot of fun out there. A lot of the days it's cold and you know, a little bit miserable, but this is the time of year that you can go expand your knowledge and make yourself a better fisherman.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm at that point where, yeah, I don't want to be cold all the time, but man, if you get your neoprene socks and gloves and layer up, I mean, it could be epic. And then Scott, you're more at this point in your career, you know, targeting redfish, but, you know, later in the show, we're going to talk about, you know, trophy trout, which Caleb mentioned is out there right now, and big trout. But if you're warm and if it's windy and a little choppy, it could be well worth your while to make that drift over some of these reefs.
Sure. I mean, like Caleb said, the part of the problem this year that's thrown everybody off, threw the fish off too, we've had such a late winter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we had that Indian summer thing going on that just continued on into Christmas and New Year's. I mean, we had record-setting highs, you know, New Year's Day. So we're just now getting into what should have been happening back in November.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the fish are going to drop off deep first. And then they're going to pull back up as we get those sunny days in between. Like Caleb said, once you have that tipping, I mean, it's kind of like in lake fishing, they talk about the turnover.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the lake turns over, and then the deeper water is cooler, and the shallow water is warmer, even in the wintertime.
All right, so another question we got here. And I want to start this one because I've got a couple, not to steal y'all's thunder, but the two things jumped in mind immediately for me. I got the question about, hey, what's your New Year's fishing resolution, if you will? And I thought, boy, that would be great to take to the whole group here on the Bite Me podcast. And the first two things, Caleb, I'll start with you, but the first two things that popped in mind, if I were to make a New Year's resolution, I already do these two things, but I think, you know, for our listeners, for Bite Me listeners, what would be the New Year's resolutions that worth keeping? To me, the two things are, and I know some people who have been on this show would disagree with me, but the first one for me is don't burn shorelines. I get it. I understand it. Scott and I have talked about it. You can see a lot of fish. You can kind of come back the next day or later and work that area, but you're ruining it for the next several, however long, hours or minutes. For a lot of people, you're disturbing potentially the actual fishery. You can find fish without burning the shorelines. And for those who don't know, it's basically going, hair on fire as close as you can to the shoreline to see what trout you can see or redfish you can see, and then come back later and do it. Don't do that. And the other one is just respecting people working birds. I actually got this question. I was checking my social media down at Matagorda, and the next day, sure enough, working birds and respecting people working birds is the easiest thing you can do. If birds are working, they're going to work, not just that particular group of birds. It's okay to have more than one boat on, a big group of birds or kind of outflank them. But we've seen, I know you guys have, some pretty brazen stuff, people working birds, and it ruins the fish for everybody. So those are my two. I hope I didn't steal y'all's thunder. But Caleb, you've been chomping at the bit to pass along some New Year's resolution for our guys and girls.
Yeah, me personally, for a resolution for me, and I'm a pretty patient guy. I'd like to even slow down and let things develop a little bit more than I already do. If we're talking about resolutions as a whole for a bunch of people out there, I think the best thing you could do is quit being a prick. That's probably pretty some pretty solid piece of advice, I'd say. I mean, I'm not talking about anybody.
Spoiler in particular. Right
down. Yeah, I've seen some stuff happen out there. I had some guys with me Friday and Saturday there from the Rio Grande Valley, and we were coming into a cove, and it's easily a one boat cove, and I'm almost to the back of it, and the way the wind's blowing, I'm have to go all the way around the back corner of it to let my guys out, and I'm putting real quiet because I've been fishing it a couple of days, and the water looked good, there was good bait, and I was just convinced there was fish there, and I'm putting back real quiet. And this boat comes up behind me, and I know exactly who he is. And I tell you, here's another resolution I had.
I knew you were going to be good on this.
2021, Caleb, because I videoed this all going down.
Just a break real quick. I had to talk him down
off of this. That's right.
You shut your mouth, Scott.
Yes, I talked him down.
He did. Camille and Scott on speakerphone. I was on a ledge. Like, I didn't know which direction I was going, but none of them were healthy. So my resolution as of 2 days ago, thanks to Camille and Scott, is, I could have, like I said, I know who the fella is. Well, we're getting there, John.
Okay.
I know who the fella is. He's a somewhat new guide there in town. I could have blasted him all over social media. I have editing software, man. I'm not the guy you want to meet a video and you doing stuff. And in fact, towards the end of it, one of my customers said, dude, I think he's videoing you. And I said, I wish he would. But anyway, so we're putting into the back of this cove, and there's a pretty nasty sandbar in front of it. And so this guy's luck, the tide had came up about a foot and a half since the day before, because it would have been awesome if it didn't. And we're going around the sandbar, and we're getting almost the back, and this guy comes blasting across the bay, and I'm watching him. And he kind of swerves towards us like he wanted to go in there. And he's like, that guy's in my way, that dude in the black and red mid tower that clearly he should know that I'm somebody got to deal with all the time. And he makes this circle, and I'm watching him kind of, meander out there at 60 miles an hour. And I hear his motor start trimming out and his jack plate start coming up.
Uh-oh.
And I looked at my guy that says, surely not. And this dude blasted the sandbar to my left and ran right in front of me, right back in the back. And one of the guys from the valley said, huh, y'all got those here too, huh? And I said, typically, one of the things I'm proud of in Matagorda is especially wade fishermen. They're real respectful. They don't get real close. I mean, John, I doubt you. I mean, other than Nick and Pat mooning you that day, I think
you haven't had too much.
Yeah. And, but karma was served. They were fishing a tournament, and, Well, I tell you what, if they had tried to weigh something in, there might have been a protest waiting on them. That might have been my retribution to it. But they wanted to get around behind me, so I let them in behind me, and then I put my guys out where they had about 20 square feet to fish for the next 45 minutes, and then had to figure out how to – I made them run their brand-new Verado across that sandbar to get back out. I promise you that. But I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I needed to – you know, I didn't want to be the guy causing drama on social media. I know the guy's phone number, and I was like, well, you know, what's the point of calling him? And, you know, people like
that.
Getting
into all that, yeah.
Well, you know, it folks like that, you know, I got more important things to worry about. So for 2022, let's just be nicer.
Calmer and gentler, kinder and gentler.
Hey, I
wonder how long that's going to stick. That's going to be like those people who get sign up at a to work out at a gym, and you know, they're trying to get their money back in February.
It's probably going to be pretty similar to I'm not keeping any fish for 2021. Let's rebuild. It's probably going to be a lot like that. But but you know, it. I mean, the only thing I did was get pretty close to the dude, and I got a crick in my neck from staring at him for 45 minutes. But I couldn't even get a look
people
back.
Know. That's about the extent of I do. I'll just kind of turn my head real slowly as they're coming by with the glasses on, just kind of looking at them. Don't make any gestures or anything. Just kind of like. Yeah, I see what you're doing.
Well, the best part was neither one of us really caught much of nothing, but we had a standoff going on, so I just burned an hour of my day.
Well, Scott, resolutions for I've got two more that I wrote down that I sent you, but I know one of them is actually both of them are right in your wheelhouse. But is there anything else that you would like to see our Bite Me listeners resolve to do in 2022?
Yeah, let's do away with those cleaning table picks.
Yep, you know? I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, I'm so tired of seeing that. That's so played out. And, oh, yeah, and one other one. The slow motion stringer shot going onto the boat from a wake fisherman.
Yeah.
I'm done. Done with it.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, I saw one the other day.
Dagnabbit, I blocked everybody that did that, yeah. So I guess I didn't know we were still doing it.
Yeah, a guy was actually teaching his son to do it. But, then the release shots after you sling them up there onto the boat, that really does it for me.
Yeah.
That's probably the main thing is I think we should get away from the ego shots, you know, the big stringers and all that stuff. We've grown past that, haven't we?
I mean, we try to do our part here, and I promise we're not trying to be, you know, grumpy gooses, as the kids like to say.
I love people to catch fish.
That's the whole reason we're here.
Keep your legal limit. That's fine. But doing it just so that you guys out there, your fishermen look like hell on those deals because they're all tired. It's the end of the day, especially a little summer trip. Yeah, they're all hot and sweaty, and they're done for the day. And you've got them squatting down on a pier behind a bunch of frozen, dead looking fish. You know, you got to squish them down to make them straighten out because they've been laid up in the ice chest for 3 hours. And the fishermen don't look happy. They don't exude, you know, a happy trip.
Joy.
I can
the joy is when you take that beautiful picture on the boat.
From experience,
that's
I can't tell you how many photos I've taken over the years that I look through Facebook, old customers. I'm talking, you know, somebody I hadn't fished with in 2 or 3 years. Look on Facebook and their profile picture is a photo that I took when they caught that big fish, when they caught that redfish on the fly. Whatever it was, and that was the happiest moment they've had fishing,
and the best picture of a full of a fish,
and it's a really good picture of a fish, and everybody's happy, and the fish is even happy, you know. Yeah. I mean, the fish is, you know, he's not laying there on ice and then froze up and glassy eyed, you know. It's just better.
I scored a Christmas card this year. A couple sent me their Christmas card was the man and the wife holding the fish. And I think it was the great picture and not so much that the wife's fish was three times as big as the husband's.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure he's the only one who got the cards made, right?
I'm quite sure she got the cards made and she sent them to everybody, not just you. I am quite sure of that. I got one more and I promise we're not just being grumpy, you know, dudes here. because I think this can help everybody, and it'll be better for everyone. Scott, I feel like you and I could say this together. Turn off your headlights at the ramp. Just resolve to turn off your headlights when you launch and it's dark. Turn off your headlights at the ramp. Everyone will thank you.
There's a telephone pole that sits right in front of the fishing center, and it's got some little dinky sign on it about parking over there. But I want to make like a 4-foot by 8-foot plywood sign and put it on that pole.
Well,
you got to look
that.
At it.
Put the logo on there.
You're,
put the
you're backed
logo
into
on
the
there.
Ramp. It's not as big a deal on a little single ramp somewhere off in the middle of nowhere. But when you've got a 4-spot like fishing center, and you got one guy that wants to leave his lights on and everybody's trying to launch, you've just blinded everybody. We're all backing all over that ramp trying to figure out where the hell to go, and we can't see nothing. So, yeah, I want to make that big old sign. I want to set it right there in front of everybody and say, turn off your damn headlights. And I know it's hard on some vehicles. But if you look in your owner's manual, there's a way to turn off the headlights on every vehicle out there, I promise you.
You know, you can tell that Scott's had a couple, and he's pumped about his elk, because the typical pause that he gives you that cues you to start just doesn't count today. He started for a second. Now, I know that pole, Scott. The waterside half of that pole is bleached out from all the light that hits it.
I bet it is. I don't know what you're talking about, but I bet
here's
right.
Here's a resolution, though. The Bite Me Facebook page has thousands and thousands of people on it, and like the same 100 people get involved in the conversations and talk about it. If you're on the show listening to this, to all this stuff, obviously you're into growing and learning. So maybe this year be a little less timid about getting in those discussions, because your question, your comment could lead it to a whole new variety of great information.
I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the great things about doing this podcast is, you know, if you're having this discussion with a couple of very, very good and accomplished guys like Caleb and Scott, a lot of times people are reluctant to say something or ask something because they think, well, I'm a man, or I'm a fisherman. If it's a woman with a lot of pride, and I don't want to look dumb, or I don't want to look like a newbie or whatever. I will say this. I don't think I've ever mentioned anyone's name other than maybe their first name when we bring up these topics and questions from our listeners. So you're still relatively anonymous, and you can swallow your pride and just answer those questions. I mean, ask those questions.
You only use the first name of that one guy.
Well, okay.
Who told you to hush?
That's
okay,
where I was going.
There was one.
Alex, I can't or remember Kevin or something. Surely it was a Chad. It had to have been a Chad. I don't know.
Yeah, it was funny.
What did I tell him? Kiss my ass?
Yeah.
But said his name about 15 times.
I did. Okay. So that was one. But it was all in fun. And he actually is my buddy now.
Oh, he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There was a tag along for that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a bunch of guides that are on the pod, on the Bite Me page.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been kind of just sitting back and I kind of watch. And the only time some of them jump in is when somebody says, hey, I need a guide for, Galveston or whatever. Then they jump in and they throw in their name and they throw it all in a box. That's fine. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only time I ever see them say anything or do anything. Guides out there, people appreciate when you give them little tips and little hints. And I mean, me and Caleb are a perfect example. We're busy as hell because we've been on this podcast and we've helped a few people out here and there. People appreciate it. And now they want to come fish with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's what Scott's saying is earn your keep.
Mm-hmm.
What folks need to understand is my YouTube, our Bite Me, all that, we get our ideas and our topics off of these discussions. So if there's something that you're wanting clarity on, then don't be scared to get in there, because believe it or not, we like dumb questions because we're great about dumb answers. They just match.
that was my initial point. I mean, you can swallow your pride. You don't have to worry about anything unless I'm having some fun with you like that one guy. Because we'll talk about it, and certainly, we'll answer those questions. I think a lot of people appreciate that. A lot of people acknowledge it, but I like your resolution Don't be bashful. Hit us up, direct message, post a topic or question on the page if you're so inclined, and go from there. Okay, so we're going to get into the big trout discussion with you here, Caleb, and I'm going to start with you. But let's first do this, because I was talking with JT Koshy over at the Boatyard, and you know, he was talking about a lot of people obviously in the market for boats, and the point came up. A lot of people, when they're test driving a boat, don't really know what to do. It's like, what do you look for? What should you really, you know, kind of be red flags or examining a boat, et cetera. Well, this guy, you know, knows it all, and he's been doing it forever. So before we get to that trophy trout discussion, let's head out to the boatyard for just a couple of minutes here, because this is a really good thing for anybody in the market for a boat. And we are back here at the Boatyard with JT. You guys know JT. It's time to, in the new year, get that new boat. And I thought the perfect person to talk to about this, JT, is you, because people are going to be test driving boats and examining boats and looking at boats, new and pre-owned. I'm not so sure, even myself, I'm not so sure everybody knows everything you should be looking for. And especially when you take that test drive, people are like, well, it handles well. Well, it's got a good motor. What are the kind of the step-by-step, all the elements, if you're going to buy a new boat or a pre-owned boat, what should you do when you're test driving and examining a new boat?
Let's just go start with new, and then we'll go to used. So on a new boat, it depends if you've had boats before in your life or you haven't. If you've had boats before, you really just want to look at how the boat handles on the water, how shallow or how deep, what kind of water can you get in, and what kind of storage does the boat have for you. Also, a lot of it has to do with the console setup of the boat. Do you like how it feels when you're driving the boat? That's where you're primarily going to be. Is this boat set up for what I want to do with it? Because there's millions of different styles of boats out there, and there's, you know, a whole bunch of people that have, you know, a whole lot of different preferences. So basically, it's all personal preference, what you like and how you want it done. Let's say like the Freedom boats, since we get them bare hull, as long as the storage is set up correctly for you, we can kind of put things exactly where you want it. That's kind of the beautiful thing about them, and they all run super shallow. And then going towards a used boat, if you're buying for a dealership, always ask them for a checkout sheet on it. A dealership will always know, you know, whether it's real old or just pre-owned trade-in. They know the compression numbers. They know what's working and what's not working. If they say they don't know, there's probably something wrong or fishy in there. You know what I mean? And then once you get like compression numbers and spark numbers, the compression numbers on a motor just lets you know the motor's solid. If something goes wrong, at least it's not the whole power head, if we're speaking outboards. And then when you test drive the boat, just make sure everything's working. It's kind of like jumping into a pre-owned car. You're going to walk in there and hit every switch in the vehicle, you know, turn the mirrors left and right, and just check every switch on the boat. When you get in from the water, when you put the boat back on the trailer, pull that drain plug in the back, see how much water comes out, see how much water the boat's taking on. That's kind of a little detail a lot of people don't think about. Yeah, a lot of it, even used stuff, it's up to preference too.
Are there any tells on the water that you need to be looking for? You know, you're going to be turning the boat. Is there anything there, whether it's sliding or is it digging as well? Is it handling the RPMs? That's one thing I check. You know, do the RPMs drop significantly, or does the speed drop significantly on turn? What should people, okay, I'm driving the boat and it feels good and you're excited because you're going to buy a new boat, whether it's pre-owned or new. But when you're driving, what are some of the things you need to be looking for on the water?
Gotcha. Two major things. Number one is if you're looking something kind of 10 years old and newer, all these outboards, they're four-stroke fuel-injected motors. They have, depending on the brand and what motor size, anywhere from 2 or 3 to 5 or 6 filters, fuel filters. If any of those have issues and the boat's been sitting for any amount of time, maybe with not the best, freshest gas in the world, you're going to know when it's on plane. If you go and test drive a boat, let the motor run up, you know, warm up, idle it a bit. When you get up on plane, I would tell everybody floor it. just pin it, hold it wide open, go down the lake, come all the way back. I'd say hold it wide open for about 15 or 20 minutes if possible, you know, if conditions allow you, so it's safe. If any of those filters are clogged up, you know, if you have a fuel filter initially after the high pressure pump and you have little filters inside each one of those fuel inject, if anything's clogged up, you won't get the max RPMs. Outboards typically run anywhere from 5,500 to 6,200 RPMs, depending on prop also. If you aren't getting that, there's an issue in the fuel system, most likely. That's what I look at. And then I would turn the boat left and right, a good gauge for the steering. If it's cable steering, then, I mean, if it turns, it turns. If it's hydraulic steering, from all the way turn one side, you know, all the way lock, say, left, take the wheel and turn it all the way to the right. Count the revolution. Five is good. If you're over five or five and a half turns, you probably have an air leak in the system. That's something to think about. You also kind of know if there's, you know, hydraulic fluid that needs to be bled as you're turning. You'll feel it kind of skip. But that's something, and you know, if it turns well and it runs good, when you go out there, hit the kill switch, start the motor up, you know, right in the middle of the lake. And that's pretty sound, you know, advice on it.
I hadn't even thought of that with the steering. That's good stuff. And I know a lot of our listeners are going to be all over. You'd mentioned the Freedom Boats. And of course, you guys are one of the dealers here at the Boatyard. Just to talk about the Boatyard, because I see guys coming in here all the time with new boats. You guys don't even take on some boats because of either they're unreliable, they don't handle, or whatever, they're wet. And we'll get into that next week, wet boats versus non. But some of the things you have here, the products you have here, what are the kind of the things that sold you on them?
So all the boats we have on the lot now, they are all composite boats. There's no wood in them, meaning I can feel confident I can sell this boat to a customer. If he loves this boat, he can, you know, motors will get old with use and time and everything. You know, it's a moving part kind of item, but they can repower that boat and have it for a very long time. Yeah, you can rewire it, repower it, and man, give that boat to your grandson and have his, you know, your grandson give it to his kid. That's kind of a good feeling and kind of something that's always backing all the boats we sell. It's all composite boats. That's really the key.
All right. That's awesome. And that's why I got my Freedom Warrior here. And I know you guys have that great relationship with Chet and everybody. Good stuff. Next week, as I mentioned, I want to get back with you, JT, because we always talk about, well, that's a wet boat. That's not a wet boat. I think that'd be a good follow-up to this. But right now, let's get back to the podcast. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, what, you know, when you're buying a new car and you don't know what you're looking at, you kind of just kick the tires. So, and you think, yeah, I like this car. But that was really good stuff from JT Koshy. All right, so you mentioned wade fishing. Caleb, I'm going to start with you on the big trout discussion. And when we are getting into prime time, it can be a little uncomfortable, but, you know, dress appropriately, get it done, get your wade right belt on. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend that, especially in cold water. Just use that Bite Me 20 code. If you don't have it already, your gear, they have the Bite Me, you know, package, so to speak, which comes with so many things. I can't even begin to tell you. It has the sling and the wade belt. And this comes in so handy, and you can have an extra rod, and everything's up above the water, and you don't have to be getting as cold. Just go to coastalfishinggear.com, use the Bite Me 20 code. This is the time to do it, and get your wade right Bite Me combo is what they call it. So, Caleb, everybody wants that big trout. I don't know how many times, you know, people have called you, because I'm sure it's in the hundreds, if not more. We're like, you know, they're pretty good fishermen, and maybe they even have their own boat, but they want that big trout. They want that big, big trout. We're all there. You know, we all want it. This is the time where you can really do it. Outside of some of the things that we always talk about on the podcast, you know, in terms of finding good trout, what is it right now that you would highly recommend people do?
You know, first and foremost, I realized something this weekend that I knew, but I should be in my head even more. And that is, I needed a lure for several different types of water. And I had about one for each of them, because that's how many I stole out of Pat's boat before I went out. I think I would have had an even better week and weekend had I had multiple of what I wanted to use. So, I mean, case in point, on Thursday, I got into some water that a high cotton soft dine was just absolutely fire in. It was unbelievable. We caught We caught several trout, including one really good one. And then there was little redfish mixed in with them. And the moment one of those redfish messed up one of my soft nines, I struggled for a bite after that. I was fishing the same stuff. And the guys that were with me, they had the right stuff, and they were still catching fish. So next time I am really going to be into it, I'm going to Anglers Anonymous, and I'm stacking up on, you know, two or three different colors, but two or three of each of them. As far as catching big trout goes, drifting wise, maybe I just haven't figured it out quite yet, but that's kind of just a roll of the dice luck to me. Waiting, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You just have to simplify what you've got going on. You have to realize that those big fish are not out there just running around trying to find something. They're going to be somewhere where they can eat as lazily as possible. This last week we were catching them, you know, out in front of drains, and it takes patience. You know, you got to let that bite happen. We fished it for a good while. Everything looked right and weren't really catching much, but then that bite window came on. So you start learning to put together, okay, there's a minor or major coming up, and the minor coincides with the tide pulling out. So the tide's pulling out, and the minor looks good. Let me find somewhere where the falling tide will be bringing bait to a fish. Now let me find somewhere where the falling tide is bringing bait to a point with an eddy on it that could have some fish laying around it. You know, we always talk about in cold water, you look for mud, warm water, you're looking for sand. That's not necessarily always true. Right now, the water's mid to upper 50s, and they're still hanging out on sand. One of the big indicators that we saw was the right size of bait. You know, there's smaller bait. I could go all over the bay and find big bait, but there's only a few areas that had the smaller bait. It's putting together, say, four simple things that you hear all the time, and then not overcomplicating it, going and planting your feet, and being okay with not catching anything.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
You know, and so Pat and I try to keep each other pumped up. For you guys, you hear me talk about Pat all the time. Pat and I live next door to each other in Matagorda, where we spend every day in each other's yards hanging out. Heck, Pat even washes my boat sometimes because he's young and I'm not. But what we have to remind ourselves of, because both of us will, you know, I had a good week. Yes, Pat's had lots of good weeks. He trout fishes a heck of a lot more than I do. And what we were talking about the other day was, man, it's been pretty good. How much better could it be if we didn't lose all this fish to the freeze? And then Pat and I got to talking that really at this point, you have to kind of put that out of your mind to where you can stay optimistic and locked in and focused on something without convincing yourself that the freeze hurts you. You know, case in point, I talked to another good trout buddy of mine the other day, and one of the areas I've been fishing that's been looking really good, I've been catching nothing but redfish in there. And I was telling him about it. We were talking back and forth, and he made the comment. He said, yeah, you know, we went there too. And it looked just like you said it looked, and we were catching little redfish. But then for about 10 minutes, the bite window ticked on, and they caught two trout. They were, you know, 7.5 pounds each. And then the window ticked off. And so you have to be prepared to sit there and catch those little bitty redfish all day, but be there when that tick happens if you want to catch a big one.
I totally agree. You mentioned Anglers Anonymous. I know you know this. Mike Butler texted me not long ago, and they have every Corky. You mentioned that, you know, they always have everyone. They have that, but they also have the hard baits. And we're going to get into the mirror lures and stuff in a little bit. But, Scott, what he touched on there really is my theory. Whenever I really want to do this, which is most days, I'd rather catch a big trout than a lot of little ones, but I like to have any fish on the end of the line. To me, Scott, the secret to catching a big trout is being willing to catch no trout, if that makes any sense, because I'm going to grind. I'm not going to get the itchy trigger finger and pick up and move if everything looks good, as Caleb was talking about. But that's how I approach it. You know, you want to catch a big trout, be willing to catch no trout, because you're going to have to just grind and cast and change baits, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said forever. Yeah, you're grinding for one bite. Yeah, if you have that mentality that you can go all day and just fish for one bite, then you can go trout fishing for trophy trout. If you don't have that mentality, and you're going to lose your focus after an hour and say, man, let's just go catch some fish, then you're probably not going to be doing real well on the trophy trout. Yeah, everybody catches one every now and then. You know, I mean, one of my biggest trout. We were fishing schools and just happened to run into them. But yeah, it's a dedication thing. You know, it's like what I'm doing out here this week. I'm hunting for one buck.
Yeah.
I've got a buck that I've seen on camera, and I'm passing a lot of, you know, pretty good bucks, mm-hmm. you know, deer that, you know, most people would shoot. And I know going out to the stand, chances are really good I'm not going to pull the trigger. And I may be out here all week and I may never pull the trigger the whole entire week, but I have one specific goal in mind, and that's to take down this big buck.
Say this, it's nice. You got some good weather. This is the weather I feel whenever I think of deer hunting. A lot of times it's a little too warm or whatever. I mean, this is heaven right now.
It's perfect out here, man. I mean, it's overcast and it's a little bit cool. In the mornings, it's really chilly, and right
start
at dark,
a fire
it gets
in the evening.
Chilly.
Have at it. So Caleb, you know, Scott just mentioned a couple of things there. One thing I wanted to follow up with you on big trout is when you are, you know, looking for, you know, you got all the signs, you got all the bait, you got everything we just talked about, and you're on that big, you know, looking for that big trout, and you're grinding and you're willing to go 6 hours without a bite. You mentioned the optimism. You mentioned, you know, don't be making excuses, because those can be kind of self-fulfilling prophecies. Well, the freeze hurt the trout, and you're kind of in that negative mode. But what is it as far as baits, in terms of you stay with the same bait? If you're convinced it works, you talked about some of the things that you can change if the bait is damaged, but is it the same type of bait? Are you matching the hatch, so to speak, because the hatch tends to have different sizes on it in those trout areas?
Yeah. So I keep the fat boys in my box, and I keep the soft dines, the soft dine XLs in my box this time of year. As far as just changing to be experimental, I might go from a quirky to a plastic just to see if they're in a different water column. But as far as the, if I see a lot of bait that's, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches long, I might start with a fat boy and work that. And then if I don't catch anything after maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes or so, then I might be looking at switching to a soft on that smaller presentation or smaller, you know, smaller lure might end up getting the bite. What I'm really looking at more than anything as far as that is I'm looking at changing my presentations. So this week we had, the water was cold, you know, mid 50s and down is where I start considering it actually to be cold, right? And so that would suggest a slower retrieve. But when we got into certain areas, there was bait just popping everywhere. It looked like a summer day, the way they were popping around. So I still worked my lure quite aggressively. Now, I just put longer pauses into an aggressive retrieve, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm really looking at more than anything. Once I get out and I look at the water, then, you know, I'm pretty simple in the fact that the reason I went with that, I got in there and the water, the sun had come out, the water was somewhat clear, and I wanted shiny sides. You know, that's about as far as I looked into it. What do I have in my box with shiny sides? So I ended up with that high cotton, because it's got like this silver paint on it with this sparkles and stuff, and it did really well. Well, then when that one got messed up, the only thing I had left in my box was this dark green one that had like, it had a shiny foil in it, but it just didn't catch the sun the same. And to me, I think that was the difference maker. And then if I don't have anything shiny, I'll go with a pearl, of course. But I'm more worried about presentation and just getting something that is in the gamut than changing lures altogether.
And I'll get your point on this in a second, Caleb, because I think you agree with me. But Scott, my experience on bigger trout, unlike, you know, your basic school trout or healthy, you know, 20, 22 inch trout, those tend to move a lot. For me, big trout, year in, year out, depending on the season that you're in these spots, tend to kind of matriculate to the same areas. And that's why we have these numbers on our sonars and our GPS. I don't know if that's been your experience. I'm going to get Caleb's thought on this, but where I've caught big trout, you know, one year, the next year I tend to catch big trout there. I don't know why, but they tend to kind of be in the actual spots.
I've thought about that a lot. They're older fish. And they've been around a few years, and that was their happy hunting ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where they found the most bait fish, and they found the easiest pickings. for whatever reason, whether it's a reef, you know, whether it's a, the way the current pushes water across a reef or whatever it is, those fish, the bigger fish seem to be lazy, you know, is the way we look at it. But what they're actually doing is conserving energy. You know, they're not going to run around like the little fish and chase a bunch of bait. They're waiting for that one big meal.
And Caleb, I think you agree with me on this, because everywhere I've caught, you know, pretty big, healthy, big trout, 25 and above, I've gone back there and had similar success, obviously, you know, after grinding a little bit, because it's never that easy. But would you agree with that? And my theory, to kind of dovetail off of what Scott said, I think they just find their not just their happy place in terms of feeding, but their safe place. I think there's good protection for big trout in certain areas, and they tend to stay in those areas.
So I'm going to ask you a question to kind of shape the point here.
Okay.
You know, pick out one of these areas that you're talking about in your head, right?
Okay.
How many times have you been there and didn't catch one?
More often than not.
Okay. So the point and the opinion that I'm going at here is that it's an area that is conducive to big fish. Because I can rattle off 5 or 10 spots in our bay where you may not catch a fish, but if you catch a fish, it's going to be a good one, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what I've noticed about our bay is I almost look at it like a racetrack where imagine an oval and then put, I don't know, 6 or 8 more ovals with it that are kind of going in different directions where it looks like, you know, like the little atomic symbol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fish kind of move in that pattern. So what they're doing is they're moving around from spot to spot to spot, but yeah, they're stopping and hanging at these areas that are conducive. Yes. And whether it's the same fish or not, I don't know. But, you know, a lot of these areas that we're talking about, they're kind of out of the way where they don't get messed with a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, they have a nice terrain or they have a nice reef. There's something about it there that, because I think what it is there's something there that consistently holds the bait that stops them while they're in their little racetrack oval that they're running for the season.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You know, wherever I have caught big fish, I've marked them there, and 9 out of 10 okay. times, 8 out of 10 times, I don't catch anything, but those 1 or 2 times are glorious. You know,
they're pretty glorious. There's spots that date all the way back to, you know, and I say all the way back to, but all the way back to Mike Mosley and those guys that the good fish are still being caught there today. There's zero doubt about it that there's areas out there that just hold them, but and I don't think, but they're definitely not there all the time. You know,
inevitably I stop at those places.
Yeah. I mean, if you see me or Pat's boat there, we're not just stopping to pick one up for a picture real quick. You know, you're checking and you're moving and you're gauging the conditions, because the conditions, you know, that's another big part of what's hedging your bet on that spot.
Yeah. No question. All right, boys, this is a good question, and I know, you know, we were going to get to it last week, and we didn't. A lot of meat on the bone here. I'm going to start with Scott, because I know this is in his wheelhouse. So many hard bait options goes the question, what's the difference? I'm trying to learn more about certain lures for 2022. Maybe that's their resolution. Mirror lures specifically. How do you know which model to go with? What is the difference in the models? 17 MR808, 17 MRI49, and so on. Just looking for some guidance. What are you thinking there in terms of mirror lure, Scott? I know this is something that you've had in your box for a long, long time.
The numbers on the back end,
mm-hmm.
those are just colors. I saw the specific question you're talking about.
Yeah, 18 MR11, 18 MR18, et cetera.
The color, I mean, that's personal preference as much as anything. You know, like Caleb, you know, gets distracted by shiny objects, obviously, but, there's a bunch of those. They're all Miradynes. There's a 14, a 17, an 18, a 27, a 37. They're just different sizes, different weights. He was talking specifically 17 and 18.
Right.
They're both 2 5/8 inch long. One's 3/8 ounce and one's 7/16 ounce. Doesn't sound like much. But one of them, the 17 is rated at 0 to 24 inches. The other one is 2 feet to 5 feet. Yeah. So it's going to sink a little bit, you know, actually sink a good bit faster.
Yeah.
You know, when you really think about it, it's just a more dense bait. Like I said, they look identical when you look at them side to side, but one of them's, when you pick them up, you can definitely feel the difference in them.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them is going to be better if you're fishing a little deeper area One of them's going to be better if you're fishing up on the flats. There's also the 14 MR, which is not used a whole lot. Don't hear about it a whole lot, but it's a little bitty one. I mean, it's just barely over 2 inches long. When they're on those schools of bait, I'd say more springtime thing kind of a bait, when they're on those little bitty, small minnows. And it's an also a 0 to 24. The whole MR series, you know, that the Miradines, they're all 0 to 24 except for that 18. Mm-hmm. Even the bigger ones, the 27 and 37. I've thrown that 37 on tarpon. It's a pretty good size bait, 3 7/8 inch, and a full ounce. So you can really chunk it. You know, you can throw it on out there, get a good cast out of it, but it's still only going to sink. You know, it's rated 0 to 36 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to stay pretty close to the surface.
So Caleb, he just gave us a lot of the technical stuff. In terms of when you're throwing a mirror lure, Miradine, softdine, what are you looking at? And what does it look like for you? Why are you choosing those baits? I think that was part of his end result, end point here.
Yeah, the Miradines, they're right there in line with the softdines, which the softdines I love. The Miradines, I use them a bit. And the reason I use them usually because I'm in a redfish heavy environment and they don't tear up near as much as the softdine does. I use the 14 in the spring around wads of shad, like Scott was talking about. It's a pretty big, it's good for, I mean, it's great for just shad. It's real flashy.
Right.
And they cast pretty good, even on a bait caster, because they are small, but they cast pretty darn good. Other than that, one of my favorite things about Mirror Lure is they have, you know, a ton of different color options.
You right, can really, that's what I was talking about. Yeah,
you can really dial in and get what's perfect for the water and for the, you know, the bait that you're seeing.
Just real quick, because I know people, it just occurred to me, I know people are thinking it listening to this podcast. Outside of matching the bait, is that the whole reason you're throwing both you guys? I'll start with Scott. What makes you say this is what I'm throwing right now, Scott? The Mirror Lure, the Mirror Dine, whatever.
Match a hatch.
Yeah, that's
That's what it really comes down to. You're trying to get that same profile of whatever the bait is that you're seeing out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at times, I mean, you may, like with the tarpon fishing that I do, you want something that you can really chunk. I mean, because tarpon, they're close to the boat, then they're a long ways from the boat, and you don't know what kind of cast you're going to have in 1 minute to the next. And so it helps to really have something that you can hum on out there and get some distance on it. Same with jacks, you know, fishing for jacks. These are great baits for fishing for jacks.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Caleb, anything to add to that or any other reasons why you're preferring that?
No, I just, I usually pick them up when I'm planning to catch a bunch of fish and don't want to be changing tore up lures. And the springtime is when you see me using them the most. And it's because I'm going to catch a bunch of 16 inch trout. And you know, tear up expensive gear when I don't have to. The other thought on it is the sound, and it's a little bit different. So if you're wanting to keep the same profile, same color, but change up the sound between a soft line and that, you know, go for it.
All right. So I want to get to what would Scott do, what would Caleb do before we get out of here. I'm going to be out on the water. I think. I mean, it's going to be blowing on Saturday. I wish I could get out there Friday. I can't. Yeah, I'm going to be out there Saturday, probably with Paul Falgu, from Deadly Dudley, deadlydudley.com. I haven't talked to him and been on the boat with him in a while. So if you're out there, Caleb, we'll come say hello so you can see Paul. And of course, all our listeners know you can get that, 20% off, same as everything else with the Deadly Dudley, which is what I throw, by and large, that and the Knock and Tail, Deadly Dudley. Just go to deadlydudley.com, use the Bite Me 20. Promo code, you can get 20% off. Hopefully we'll have some good pictures and a good time, even though it's going to be blowing. Scott, I'll start with you. I'm planning on at least early try to get out in the middle of the bay, see what the wind is doing, and do what Caleb was talking about earlier, finding some lower water, some reefs that are maybe partially exposed and either waiting on there or drifting by them. And then maybe getting into a back lake or two when the wind picks up. But what would Scott do this weekend?
Yeah, you're going to do that on Friday. You ain't doing that on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday's going to be
blowing. From what I'm seeing, this is the first time, I'll be straight up honest with you, this is the first time I really looked at it because I've been looking at what my weather's doing over here for these deer.
Yeah, it's going to be blowing, man.
Holy hell.
35?
30, gusting to 39 at 9 a.m. on Saturday.
See, where I looked, it was a little calmer early in the morning, and then it picks up. But
that's the jetties at Matagorda at Port O'Connor.
Okay.
That I'm looking at. That's pretty stiff, man. Northwest and temperatures dropping. You know, there are times.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yep.
There are times when you stack up those honeydew points.
Yep.
And you get those projects done around the house that your wife's been nagging at you for.
So I did that last weekend, man. Better, I got to go fishing.
You can fish on better days than that. If you really got to go, I mean, man, find you a protected shoreline with some deep water nearby, you know, an edge with a drop off and go for that. I mean, the water's already falling out. We're not going to have any kind of dump. This is just going to press the water even lower.
Yeah.
It could be pretty sketchy out there. Mm-hmm. Have your sea tow paid up because you may need it.
Trying to talk me out of it.
you may need an airboat. You know, talk to Caleb. He knows all of them.
Yeah, he does. Up and down the coast.
They're on my call list.
What will Scott do? Yeah, Scott's going to deer hunt.
Do the honeydews. Go hunting. Etc. Well, here's my strategy, Caleb, and maybe I'm channeling you on this because I'm generally erring to the side of caution, and I wouldn't be out on the water in 30 mile an hour wind.
You're channeling Caleb, and you're going to the side of caution.
Yeah,
I call BS.
my strategy is, well, come, you know, Thursday or Friday, that forecast is surely going to change because you can't trust the forecast when it's good weather.
There you go.
So it would stand to reason, right? That you
there
can't
you
trust
go.
The forecast when it's a bad forecast. I think my strategy there is pretty sound.
I'm sitting there listening to this, and that was what was going through my head. I'm like, man, you boys making plans a little early, I feel like. I think 6 a.m. on Saturday is when we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like with the point Scott made a while ago, before one of these last ones, Mike Ashworth, the guy that's going to give Scott a tattoo one of these days, he texted me. He said, man, I need to be on the water. It's been too long. And one of those blasters was coming the next day. I said, I tell you what, bud, and I'm reading the text right now. I said, you can have my spot. I'm in my studio editing today. I'm very happy about it. I've got shorts on. It's warm. I'm not wearing shoes. I'm listening to music. This is great. No.
Part of it to me is reassuring, Caleb, because like, you know, I fished so much in my life and I still just do like I have that dumb gene. Like I haven't fished in 2 weeks almost. I'm going to fish. I will say, you know, if it's bad Friday, I probably won't go out. Paul Falgu listens to this podcast all the time. Paul, I'll get back to you on Friday if we're going to bail on Saturday. But I'm still holding out that it's going to be good. But what would Caleb do? If you have to go, the other thing is I want to wade. I haven't waded really, you know, a good, hard, serious wade in a long time. And that would be the time to do it, I'm guessing.
I'm going to give you a plan, John. Let's talk about your plan.
Let's talk about my plan.
My YouTube people told me that they want me to go out somewhere I haven't seen and make a plan. Well, I have not seen Our Bay in about 2 days. I think Friday is going to be absolutely delicious.
Yeah,
I think that the afternoon is the time to fish. In the morning, the winds are low, and you know that I'm all about low winds because I like to redfish. But trout fishing wise, I think the afternoon is going to be delicious. The barometer's fallen from 30.08 to 29.88 at dark. One thing I can tell you from just coming back from there is the tides are up. They're up. The top of the high tide is about a foot and a half above normal, right?
Yeah.
So I think Friday evening is going to be good. I think you can wade a lot of your summer and fall spots. Okay. Saturday. Now this is the part that we aren't real sure about because it's kind of extended in the forecast, but right now it's telling me that front's blowing in at 9 a.m. Okay. At 9 a.m. when that front hits at 24 to 40, the barometer is at 30.0, but at 6 a.m. the barometer is at 29.83. So if you can catch a window,
that's what I was saying, Scott,
between the front and the morning,
early. Give me two hours. All I need is 2 hours.
That's the kind of scenario that's all it takes. But that's, again, it goes back to earlier in the podcast we were talking about where you find somewhere it's got some decent water movement and some decent bait in it, dude, just stay there until that front blows you out of there. It's that simple. About 9 a.m., I'd recommend going home. That would be great.
That water's going to be moving. It's going to be moving up and down.
White
things on top.
All right.
Well, it's going to be Saturday. By Saturday at dark, it is going to be dumping out of there again because these light winds, they're letting everything back in from the last dump for the most part. Mm-hmm. That whenever, oh boy, came by me and told me, hi, nice to see you. The tide had come up a foot and a half since the evening before. It's going to be up on Saturday, and then Saturday night is going to be down.
I guarantee you, I'm probably not going to go now. Y'all are talking me out of it. So
what? I just told you it's going to be great.
No, if I go, it'll be great for about 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Scott, see, this is
there's a 45-minute window that's going to be awesome.
Listen, Scott, as a fellow redfish enthusiast, I agree with you, but these trout people just built different, Scott. I don't understand it either.
I fished trout for a long time.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
That's in my DNA, man.
And I was a lot younger when I did it. And now that I'm older, here, in all seriousness, folks, if you're listening to this, be damn careful.
Oh, for sure.
This is the kind of front that can kick your butt.
Yep.
This one's going to smoke you.
You got 10-mile-an-hour winds at daylight, and it looks all cool and everything, so you run all the way across the bay.
No.
You get over on that south shoreline, and that 40-mile-an-hour front hits, and you don't know what the hell to do to get back over to where you started from.
We've all been there. We've all learned the hard way.
That dark blue line on the horizon, that really dark, dark blue line.
That means they're about to bite, right?
Yeah. That means get the hell out of there.
They're about to bite. Five more casts.
They call it a blue norther for a reason.
There's a bunch of people out there listening that their dad was a smoker, right? And whenever he's out there cooking, they'd be ready in one more cigarette. And then after that smoke, it was just completely terrible. That's pretty well the situations you put yourself in whenever you start seeing it. Because I'm always in that situation. I told y'all a couple weeks ago, me and Pat crossed the bay in 25-foot boats with 300s on them, and the top end was 12 miles an hour, and there was nothing fun about it. I mean, Saturday's the day that'll get people. And,
all right.
Yeah.
So I guess you're gonna talk me into asking for Friday off, see if I can get Friday off, put it in for that day. But we'll figure it out. And if I don't go this week, the water's still there. I'll be able to go next for sure. You guys have been awesome. Really fun podcast for sure. Also, don't forget about Knock and Tail. Man, I can't forget my guy, Mike, at MikeCoastOutdoors.com. Great soft plastics. He's got it going on. He told me some dude from, I think I mentioned this once, but some dude from Indiana bought a bunch of Knock and Tail, and he listens to the podcast in Indiana. So that's kind of cool. Just go to MikeCoastOutdoors.com, use that same code, BITEME20, and you can get 20% off of those Knock and Tail. So thanks to you guys for sure. Thanks to JT. Of course, Chet over at Freedom Boats has got it going on as well. And we mentioned him when we were talking to JT. He's really churning out some fantastic boats over there. So look at those. Scott, I know you got a big buck you're looking for. I'm going to let you go. And Caleb, I'm going to be in touch with you this week because I don't know what it is. I still got that little kid in me, man. If I haven't fished in 10 days or more, then I'm probably going to be out on the water. But I'll check with you to see what it looks like.
Call Pat. He'll go with you.
Pat will go with me.
I called Pat the other day. I said I renamed my waders. I have a new name for them. If I were to tell Cade to go get my waders for me, I'd say, hey, Cade, go in my fishing room and bring my stupid pants.
I've never heard anything better than that.
Hey, Pat will be ready to go. Call him.
All right, guys.
Wearing his stupid pants.
Yeah, you're going to go let us know on the group page, Scott, if you get that buck. I'm sure you will. You guys have a great one. Catch a lot of fish. Be safe. Don't do like me. And we'll figure it out. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good time, and we will talk to you next week.